Welcome back to my watery grave, where we examine the truly horrific and mysterious stories from across the globe at the fine midnight hour. A storm rages on over the Arabian Sea tonight. The lightning dances through the sky, illuminating the ever-cloudy horizon. I would appreciate it a lot more if the waves weren't trying to flip me. It's not really the gentle rolling I had in mind when I was leaving Turkey, but it will pass. It was a gloomy day, so I'll be excited to see the sun again. It reminds me of a danger lurking in the UK. It's not a new threat, and it won't affect many, but it's still there. And it will continue to feast until I kill it or it consumes itself. I'll stop tiptoeing around it. It's story time. Murky fog looms over the Scottish horizon. Rolling hills act like ocean waves leading farther away from civilization. The green grass gently blankets the terrain. Sheep grazing start to scatter as blood-curdling screams break through the peaceful morning of August 17, 1848. The screams came from a small cottage hidden alone, surrounded only by livestock and jagged black rocks. However, the shrieking didn't come from anything inherently evil. Almost the opposite, in fact. It came from something beautiful. The screams were of a brand new mother and her baby boy. James Wallace was born to Annie and Alexander Wallace in the small, secluded shack. Alone, they raised this child with nothing but love and compassion. They cared for him as well as any parents could, and he loved them deeply. He was always with them, and they were basically all he knew. James's life was not easy, however. Like many families at the time, they suffered from starvation and poverty. The Wallaces' only income and food came from their small herd of sheep. Occasionally, Alexander would travel down to a small village to trade wool and meat for other supplies. But other than that, they were completely isolated from outside. All James knew what to do was herd sheep and slaughter them. He was taught by his father, just like his father learned. As James's simple life waned on, times grew harder. Annie passed away from an illness when James was 14, and his father soon followed. This seemed to be the end of the Wallace household, as James, however capable of a shepherd he was, couldn't keep up with the work by himself, especially not as young as he was. His father, on his deathbed, realizing he was leaving his son with nothing, taught him the other Wallace trade. This was not a normal or respectable trade. This was sin-eating. Alexander, in intricate detail, explained how to eat a dying man's sins in exchange for food or other necessities. James is horrified to learn of the generations of Wallaces before him that would feed off the sins of others just to survive, only to be damned in hell for eternity. James refused to accept this as his only option. But Alexander remained steadfast that this was the only way. It was a hard world, and it would eat you alive, so you would sometimes have to eat back, he said to his son before dying. With both of James's parents deceased, he was now alone for the first time in his life. Months went by, and James had exhausted the sheep herd to the final one. And he knew he would have to find other people. James made his journey out of the highlands to the lower village, which compared to the sparse landscape he grew up in, seemed teeming with life. James, however, felt no love and compassion here. only human struggling to survive like his family was a year earlier. Slowly walking through the settlement, he saw a handful of people enter a larger building. He followed them in and instantly smelled some stew simmering over a fire and saw people drinking together at a table. James walked up to the bar and sat on the stool. The bartender walked over and asked him if he was new in town. James explained that he was the son of Alexander Wallace, and the bartender, recognizing the name, offered the boy a drink. He remarked how he hadn't seen his dad for a while, and asked if he had anything to trade with him. James sat there quietly with his head looking down. The bartender, realizing shortly after what had happened, he apologized for the loss and said that Alex was a good man. James looked up at the bartender and asked if he knew anyone he could work for, but the bartender just somberly shook his head. "We've been hit hard by the famine," he said. It was silence for a long time as James had to consider if he would cave to his father's last request. He broke the silence and whispered to the bartender and asked him if he knew anyone that would need their sins gotten rid of. The bartender looked at James in the eye for a bit, asking if he was really willing to go down this path, and the young man just responded that he didn't have any other choice. He just bent over and whispered that there was an older man, and he was dying a few houses down the way. James thanked the man and stood up and left. James followed the bartender's directions and walked to the small cottage. He knocked on the door a few times before a middle-aged lady answered the door. She was obviously very upset as her eyes were swollen and red from tears. James recognized the pain she felt losing a loved one. He explained why he was there, and before she slammed the door in his face, her husband hobbled to her and stopped her. He questioned James if he could really do what he claimed, and James nodded. The man let him in and laid on his bed. His wife sat next to him, holding him while sobbing. The couple made their final goodbyes, and James began. He remembered his father's teaching and did everything as he was told, just like when he had to first slaughter a sheep. James placed his hands on the man's chest and breathed slowly, focusing on the beating of his heart, only a few centimeters away from his hands. It was weak and weathered, barely strong enough to move his hand up and down. He told the man to think of his sins, to think of every mistreatment he's ever done. The man closed his eyes and started to cry. James felt the pain flood into him through the man. The anguish continued to grow and change. It was no longer pure sadness. It was darker. James felt almost as if there was a black sludge that was shooting into his hands. His hands shook violently, but he forced them down, feeling the man's heart beat faster and faster. The husband started shaking violently, vibrating the whole bed. The wife, horrified by the event, backed into the corner and sat, covering her eyes to the horrors in front of her. Minutes passed as painful groans of seizure-like shaking before, all at once ending with complete silence. James looked at the now lifeless man, and then at his hands. His wife opened her eyes to see her husband had passed. She looked at James and asked if it worked, and if he was going to go to heaven. James felt the sins flow through him, almost like sludge out of a pipe. He nodded and said that she'd see him again one day. The sadness in the room didn't leave, but she gave a small smile at that thought. She offered him some food as payment, and James quickly took the food and left. Once he got outside, he started to run away from town into the countryside. It didn't take long for him to get onto the outskirts of town. He stopped and kneeled over, vomiting up the little amount of food and bile he still had in his stomach. James continued dry heaving until he forced himself to stop. The evil that entered him made him sick, but he finally had food and could survive for at least a little longer. He ate the bread he was given and sat alone amongst the green, looking up at the gray, cloudy sky. He pulled out the only blanket he had and laid down. He felt exhausted from the event and just wanted sleep. Waking early the next day, hearing birds chirping and feeling soaked from the morning dew, he got up and looked around. He was feeling better, but still had a pit in his stomach. He put his blanket away and walked back into town. James entered the bar and sat on a stool again. The bartender walked up to him and asked him if he was okay. James sat there quietly. The bartender continued to tell him that the town had heard about what he had done. James stood and was about to leave before the bartender grabbed his arm. He told him that they aren't mad about it or anything, and that there's another family willing to use his services. James looked at the man and asked where. Once again, he was instructed how to get to the house, and James was on his way. He arrived at the house and knocked. The door was answered by a small child, but soon after, the boy's sister walked up too. James asked if his parents were home, and to go get them. The kids told him they knew who he was, and if he was the one that were going to save his parents. Slightly confused by this, James hesitantly said yes and entered the house. A woman walked out of the other room in the cottage and introduced herself as their aunt. She led James into the bedroom and found the two very ill parents laying next to each other. The aunt explained that they are dying and need him to take away the sins before they pass. James pulled the aunt to the side and explained that he can't do it for free, and she understood offering him the house to stay in. She was taking the kids in, and after they left, the house was going to be empty. James nodded and walked to the bed. As he did yesterday, he put his hands on the chest of the man and told him to think. James told the aunt and the kids to leave the room, as no child should watch their parents go through this. James' thoughts flooded with memories of his parents, and his hands began vibrating again. He refocused his mind on the heartbeat and began feeling the sins flood into him. After the man was finished, he moved on to the woman and did the process. When all was done, he opened the door and let everyone see the bodies. James quickly exited the house and threw up, barely making it outside. But it wasn't the bread from the day earlier. It was just dark and thick, like the sludge he felt sucked into him. He wiped his face and walked back inside. The woman thanked him and left with the kids. She told James that the bodies would be picked up later in the day. It didn't matter much, because soon after the family of the deceased had left, James fell asleep in the middle of the floor from exhaustion. Sun poured in through the window and rustled James from his slumber a while later. He didn't know how much time had passed, but it felt warm outside, and he was eager to find sustenance. He exited and walked down the town's path. The small village somehow seemed more decrepit. He opened the door to the bar and found only the bartender sitting at the table. James sat next to him and questioned him. He explained that the famine has rendered most people bedridden, and he hadn't seen James for a month. The man chuckled and said James has plenty of business now, in a more sorrowful tone. James continued to have a busy summer season, consuming this whole town, and by the start of autumn, he had one more person before he was once again alone in the world. His only other living companion was the bartender. This wasn't a coincidence, as James would provide him with food and supplies he needed. James considered him a friend, and didn't want to lose the only person he cared for since his parents. But, as in all things do in James's life, they come to an end. The bartender developed a hacking cough, and without quality medical care, he was not long for this world. They stayed together for a couple weeks, surviving on what little they had. But even though James gave most of his food to the bartender, he gave in to temptation and pleaded to James to end him. Eat his sins and let him pass. James was mournful and reluctant to be alone again, but fulfilled his friend's request. Before he died, the bartender told James of a large city with many deaths per day. Its name was London, and it was many miles south. James thanked the bartender for his information, and for the final time, he began the process. James, by this point, was quite adept at eating sins. He no longer vomited or slept after consumption. It was possible to do the ritual in a few minutes without struggle. He didn't feel the sins sucking into his hands. It was more like he was seeking out and ripping them from the victim's body. He needed them. James didn't require food or warmth. He lived off of the sins, and it gave him unnatural power. After the task was done, and James was once again alone, he packed and began his journey. James was quite the odd sight walking the countryside on his way south. He wasn't malnourished or lethargic. He would be regarded as a hulking beast for that time period, standing 2 meters tall and weighing well in excess of 100 kilograms. James appreciated the sights he saw on his hike, and the serene peace he felt from being completely surrounded by green grass, almost like how he grew up. But the scenery was quickly to change into the bleak streets of London. He walked down the streets and alleys, completely astonished by the technology he was never aware of. The horse-drawn carriages avoided the meandering beast. Maybe they felt the evil lurking inside him. Before he had too much time to explore the soot-covered brick buildings, he heard a shriek of pain ring out from a nearby factory. Rushing to the source of the noise, he found a man had been partially crushed by a broken loom wheel. It had landed on his midsection, destroying his intestines and pelvis. He was bleeding out and wasn't long for this world. Kneeling down and holding the hand of the man, James told him to let go of his sins and pass on. The crowd around him seemed a bit confused, but were just so horrified by the sights that they didn't pay attention to James feasting. He finished up quickly and continued on his way, looking for more victims, as he still does to this very day. He ages too slowly for human perception, but you can see how the evil damages him, like acid eating away the vessel in which it's stored. You may think of James as a hero, or savior of sort. And in a way, he is. Or at least, was. There is something noble about ensuring people don't fear traveling into the great unknown. But the more he's consumed, the less it's become about survival. He seeks out tragedy, and maybe even causes it, to keep eating. He's eaten so much over the years, it's honestly surprising he hasn't burst. I won't drone on any longer. His life continued in similar fashion, and I won't bore you describing each horrendous act. The years and maybe sins have made him cold. I still haven't decided if he alone is worthy of an individual visit. But regardless of whether I seek him out or not, we will cross paths one day. I've done too much, and soon James will tire of average civilian sins and be drawn into larger sources, like the kinds that congregate at my door. Don't let your sins control you or shape you. Move on and be better. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Stay vigilant. There are dark forces among us.